Jesus was a controversialist. And the things about which he began controversy were key issues among the people of Israel. Barry read to you one of those controversies. And what I want for us to do is understand the nature of that controversy. It had to do with first century people's view of sin and evil. We need to contrast that with our own view of sin and evil, and then notice Jesus' remedy. We may think the controversy was rather silly. Jesus' disciples were eating food and they didn't wash their hands. And it wasn't a matter of clean hands from the hygienic sense at all. It was a view very prominent among Jesus' contemporaries that evil and sin had some sort of objective form, invisible but real, maybe like germs, spiritual germs. And if you had those spiritual germs on you, you were contaminated. They called it unclean. And if you were unclean, you couldn't go to synagogue, you couldn't go to temple, you were cut off from God, you were literally an untouchable person. Because if, for example, this podium is an unclean object, in his Jesus world it would have been pigs or sinners who were untouchable. You say that a pig or a sinner touched this podium, the podium would then have this objective evil on it. And if I come along and I touch it, I have that same objective, invisible evil clinging to my hand. And then if I eat, I ingest it. And if I ingest it, it's inside of me, and then what can you do? You see, there were ceremonies you went through to get the stuff off of your hands. The certain way you washed your hands. You held one fist and washed the other hand over it and then reversed the process. Or cooking utensils were washed in the same ceremonial way. It was, they thought, God's way of getting this evil stuff off of objects so then it wouldn't get on you or me and we wouldn't get it inside of ourselves. And if inside of ourselves be so terribly corrupted that we're cut off from God. Well, Jesus took that one head on. And his point was that their view of sin and evil was that it was an external thing out there that we get on ourselves or then from the outside get inside of ourselves. And we would think of that, I suppose, as certainly a primitive view of evil. We know evil isn't an objective, invisible entity that gets on us and that we can ingest or that we can somehow wash off of our hands. And we know better than to think that that all evil is something external that goes into us. We might even think that that view is superstitious. And it's certainly not realistic. We moderns have a radically different view of sin and evil. Much more advanced, much less superstitious, but I'm going to suggest to you just as unrealistic. Ever since the Enlightenment, there has been a movement in the human race to demystify the whole notion of sin and evil or to humanize it. That's being questioned these days, but it's still there. The people that you live and work with, at least the people that you work with most of the time, the culture out there, if they come into a meeting like this and we talk about creating a clean heart, they're just not going to get it. If we talk about sin and evil as corrupting forces that we're trying to fight with the help of God, they're really not going to get it. And in order for us to be authentic Christians in a world like this, or in order for us to understand the modern world, in order to have some influence on it, we'd better understand where they're coming from. And I want to give you a few handles that you can grab that'll help you understand this world. Since the Enlightenment, the whole universe has been understood in general as totally explainable in and of itself. The universe that we can see, this objective, measurable world of planets and atoms and people like us, the solar systems and the stars, the whole universe, that's all there is. And therefore, if you're going to explain the universe, you must explain it in its terms and its terms alone. Therefore, human beings, as part of that larger universe, can be explained in the same process. We explain or understand ourselves in relationship to this great big universe. And the Enlightenment taught us that everything is understandable with our minds, or measurable by the instruments of science, and consequently, all of the problems of the human race or the problems of the universe are solvable by systems within the system. Or we humans have got the power to solve our own problems because this is all there is us and this universe. Now, that means that sin and evil are understood as environmental, not really personal or moral. And the assumption was that if we could just understand the universe scientifically, or if we could just understand human beings rationally, or if we could understand ourselves against nature, somehow or another we could strip away all the environmental causes of bad things happening to good people or bad things happening in the universe as a whole. It was a re-mythologizing, if you will, of the story of the Bible, which explains good and evil and the human race. Rousseau, for example, one of the Enlightenment scholars, talked about the Garden of Eden, and he talked about sin and evil and the serpent and depravity, but he emptied it of any supernatural content and explained it simply in terms of this world that we live in. And so sin is all the stuff around us that alienates us from each other and alienates us from the earth itself. And if human beings could somehow or another get back to our primitive state, back in nature, he talked a lot about the noble savage, if you remember. If we could just get back to that primitive state and get away from all these alienating things around us, then everything would be fine and we somehow or another could solve our problems. And so our view is not so much primitive or superstitious. From the point of view of a 20th century person, that Enlightenment view is pretty romantic and really unrealistic. By the turn of this century, the Christian church had bought that sort of view, not lock, stock, and barrel, but to a tragic sense, had bought that view of things. And the church tended to empty the faith of its supernatural content and to try to explain the Bible and to explain Christianity and really explain human nature, even salvation, in strictly human terms. Evolution and the evolutionary ideas were triumphant at the turn of the century. And biological evolution was accompanied by a notion that since the universe appears to be evolving, human beings must be evolving within it as well. And every day and every way the world is getting better. That was the slogan at the turn of the century. Christianity, to some degree, bought that. And an English poet at the height of that kind of thinking at the end of the last century said, "The seal of his knowledge is sure. The truth and his spirit are wed. Glory to man in the highest, for man is the master of things." Well, then came the First World War and the Second World War and Marxism and all that we see in the world around us today. And that romantic view is not taken that seriously anymore, but it is still true that most of the human beings we live and work with, the cultural image makers and opinion makers of our time still believe that the universe is explainable in itself and human beings as part of that process are explained simply in terms of this universe. And therefore, sin and evil, while not external matters we wash off of our hands with water, nonetheless, all of the problems of the world are solvable by the stuff in the universe itself and by the powers of the human race. I would suggest to you that that's unrealistic, but that's what we're up against in this world. That's been challenged, as I mentioned. A theologian challenged it the first part of this century. His name was Reinhold Niebuhr. And to put Niebuhr in a sentence, and this is really to oversimplify him, he would say, the one thing about the Christian faith that is empirically verifiable is original sin. There's one thing we can be sure of in this world, and that is evil is real. And it's not a figment of the imagination. There's something demonic, systemic, universal, destructive, which all of the powers in the human race and governments and business and science has never yet been able to solve. He wrote a book. He wrote it to the world at large. He didn't write it to the church. The church heard him. And theology was adjusted. But the world really didn't hear him. And so the latest attempt is by a theologian whose name is Bernard Ram. He writes a theology of sin and titles it Offense to Reason. Fundamentally wrong with us human beings. And that battle within is not something that a human being can solve on his or her own. There's something more involved than simply all this human stuff. But that's what we're up against. If we want to understand the Christian faith, at least in its biblical form, and if we want that Christian message to have any impact upon the people we come in contact with every day, we've got to understand there's something more going on. And the Christian view is that the human race, and you in particular, cannot be understood simply in terms of your environment, the mind, or nature. Neither can evil or sin be understood in strictly environmental or human terms. That human beings must be understood in the context of a God who made us, and that evil must be understood as the disruption of the relationship between the Creator God and humans whom He created, and that that disruption is not a human issue, it's an eternal issue. And since it's an eternal issue, it can only be dealt with from the eternal side of the equation. Consequently, we can't forgive our own sins, and we can't solve our own tendency to sin. We need help. Now, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, from a secular point of view, probably did as much to destroy the Romantic Enlightenment view of things as anybody when he wrote The Gulag Archipelago. Utopian visions of the human race and nations and societies had been prominent for hundreds of years. Marxism, the system that put Solzhenitsyn in jail, was one of those utopian systems. Capitalism is another. It believed that if you just let unfettered market powers control the universe, everything will turn out okay. Marxists believe that in another system, if you put the right things in place, everything will turn out okay. And American business, our friend in the bonfire of the vanities, has proven that capitalism unfettered does not liberate, it in fact enslaves, and the Marxists prove the same thing. Solzhenitsyn, in his reflection upon his time in prison, said this about evil. And I think this is among the things that is beginning to shatter the modern view. If only there were evil people somewhere, insidiously committing evil deeds, and it were necessary only to separate them from the rest of us and destroy them. But the line dividing good and evil cuts through the heart of every human being. And who is willing to destroy a part of his own heart? Jesus taught his disciples that sin is not as easy a matter as washing external infection off of your hands. Nor is it as easy as trying to explain ourselves in relationship to the objective material universe. Jesus said, and the text that you heard this evening, sin is not something outside of ourself, it's inside. He said, for from within, out of men's heart, come evil thoughts, and the evil thoughts is the larger subject, and the rest of these flow out of evil thoughts. Sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery. Most Christians are saying amen to all of those. But listen to the next half. Greed, malice, deceit, envy, slander, arrogance, and folly. Jesus' conclusion. All these evils come from inside and make a person unclean. The Christian view, you see, is that sin and evil is far more than the environment. Human beings are far more than our understanding of ourselves rationally. That there is an eternal disruption of the very nature of the universe and of we human beings who are God's primary creation in the universe. The Bible is written on the assumption that something's wrong that needs to be remedied. History confirms that there's something wrong that needs to be remedied. The empirical, verifiable aspect of Christianity and our own experience corroborates that there's something desperately wrong that needs to be corrected. You may have heard the quotation by Michael D. Montaigne, No man is a hero to his own valet. And none of us are heroes to ourselves either, are we? We understand from experience, we can understand by reading the newspaper, that there's something loose in the human race, and we partake of it. It's universal, it's pervasive, it's systemic, it's destructive. All of us are caught up in it. Christians are not exempt from its powers. The battle within, even after faith in Jesus Christ, still rages, and in fact it may even be greater than before faith, because life is simply a struggle with evil. That's the way it is. That's the way it's going to be. Listen to Bernard Ram. His theology of sin, which I mentioned to you, Offense to Reason, is as well done as any I've read. Speaking as a Christian, by sin we mean the sum of all of the litanies of human woes, evils, and sufferings. Sin means the tragic fracturing that can happen to the human psyche, as well as the tragic fracturings in the life of a nation. The litany of sin includes crimes, wars, lawsuits, and mental disorders. It includes all forms of alienation, brutality, and discrimination. It also includes those more polite and subtle ways of human abuses, the way humans abuse each other, rather. It denotes family problems, national problems, international problems. It includes personal vices as well as the vices of governments. Sin is contradiction. Sin is violence. Sin is serpentine subtlety. Sin is moral inertia. Sin is inhuman response to tragic human suffering. Ram's conclusion, and I agree, can there be a more important topic for human discussion? It may be, you see, that we're setting at the moment in human history that is a teachable moment. As the whole enlightened edifice falls, and we realize that there's something at loose in us and the human race which all of our human efforts cannot solve in combination. Maybe, just maybe, the people you work with, the people you long to understand the Christian gospel, may be ready to hear that this thing that is at loose within us is simply larger than our ability to solve. And the Christian message is that not only are humans explainable only in terms of divine, and sin and evil in the universe only explainable in terms of a larger fall and the disruption of the relationship between God and humans, but also that help for the human race, which the whole message of the Bible is about, aid, if you will, reconstruction, if you will, rescue of your life, nation's lives, society, that too must come from the other side. And the gospel of Jesus Christ is the good news that the internal battle, which all of us understand, is solvable. Jesus is witness number one. He strikes us to the heart, doesn't he? He reaches deep inside and helps us understand the issue is not the stuff out there. The issue is always the stuff in here. That line, Solzhenitsyn said, that cuts through the middle of our own hearts, that causes us, if we're going to do battle with it, to divide ourselves in half. And it's why it's so difficult. Jesus said, if you want help, you got to look at what goes on the inside. And if my problem is theft, the solution to my problem is not removing the objects that my hand wants to take up and put in my pocket. The solution is not to cut off my right hand so I can't reach out anymore. I'll figure out a way to do it with my left. And it's not to cut off both of my hands. I'll figure out a way to stick it in my pocket with the stubs of my arms. The issue, you see, in stealing or in theft is what's wrong inside of me that makes me want to take things that don't belong to me. The real issue of theft, you see, is coveting. And what is it inside the human soul that makes us harm other people to get what we want? Or that makes us harmed by people getting what they want walking over us? For whatever it is they may covet, whatever thing or person or thing in us that they may desire. What's wrong with us? And Jesus' gospel says that the good news is that there is power from eternity brought by Christ to the earth, the power of the cross to forgive, but the power of Christ's resurrection to enable us to live with our desire to take things that don't belong to us, to take people who don't belong to us. that desire, that battle within us to make people think we're something that we're not, which causes all of us to come under the category of liar, the intent to deceive. See, the Apostle Paul, late in his life, wrote what we call Romans chapter 7. It's a confession of his own struggle with himself 35 years after his conversion to Jesus Christ. See, the battle goes on, that battle within. At the end of his life, Paul writes, "The law thou shalt not covet created a war within me. And the more I listened, thou shalt not covet, the more my heart desired things that didn't belong to me." Things, people, honors, titles, he doesn't list them. He simply says, it's a war. And the thing I don't want to do, I keep on doing. The things I want to do, I somehow or another can't find the power to do. Oh, wretched man that I am, who shall deliver me from the body of this death? That's a startling conclusion from a missionary apostle, isn't it? But it's true, and all of us can identify with it. But Paul doesn't end there. He says, I thank God through Jesus Christ my Lord. There is escape. Not total eradication of my desire to have things that aren't mine. Not total eradication of all of that list of things inside of me that make my hands and my feet and my eyes and my mouth and my heart do and want things that they shouldn't. But there's a power from eternity that gives us coping power for the struggle within today. The mechanics of that are crucial. And I want to talk about the mechanics of that next week in detail. What I want to establish tonight is for all of us to understand the good news of the gospel is that there is rescue in Christ who came from the other side, who established on earth in space and time and in human beings like us the possibility of liberation, the possibility of triumph over sin and over evil, the establishing of a relationship with eternity and with brothers and sisters here that can make a difference in a world like this. The question, you see, is not the evil within us. The question is, do I have the courage to face the evil and accept the solution, which is surrender to the God-man, Jesus Christ? Have you the courage? And if you've made that decision, have you the courage tonight to make it again, and tomorrow to make it again? And please come back next week and hear the mechanics, the power of the cross and the resurrection for continuing liberation, coping power for life in times like these. Amen.